Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, so, yeah, by servitude, page 59. In this way, broad-minded devotees cleanse the contamination of their hearts by the great ways of Sri Hari's service. They then become qualified to make friendship with him. Because if one's always in the mood of service, at all times you can render service, means you can always be absorbed in the Lord. You can't be a friend if you're not absorbed, if you're not thinking and considering. So 10, the loving friendship towards Lord Sri Hari and the characteristics of the devotees who are under the shelter of such friendship. The author now describes the characteristics of Shakya. The great ecstatic friendship for Lord Vasudev, which is filled with the ocean of joy and is awakened in the hearts of the most faithful devotees, is called Sakyam. Those devotees who have surpassed the ocean of birth and death, even though they are mortal beings, are eligible to make friends with bliss personified, Sri Krishna, in the spiritual world. Because friendship means that there has to be some common quality, right? So if one is absorbed in the mundane, where is the common field, right? That's what makes friends. Your situation is common, right? The individuals are unique, but the situation is what's common, right? So unless your situation is being situated transcendentally, then how one will function in with the Supreme Lord, who functions exclusively in a transcendental environment? Does that make sense? So one has to be freed from the ocean of birth and death, which means, as before, is that one is not interested in it. That's all. It doesn't mean that one's not situated here. That's why he uses that, even though they are mortal beings. Right? He points that out, because friendship can be established while still within the material form, right? Or the mortal form, let's say. Because material would indicate that there's an illusion. But what we're talking about is the mortality of it, right? Does that make sense? There's a difference. The body dies, but it doesn't mean it's material, right? It's made of material elements. It means, or say, it's made of the external elements, but that doesn't make it material. Material means it's not connected to the Lord, right? That's the simple definition. Material simply means it's not connected to Krishna. It can be shastric. Can be pious, but if it's not connected to Krishna, it's material, because there's illusion. If there's no illusion, right, one understands the actual transcendental position of the soul and service, then one's situation is transcendental. But the elements you're dealing with are still temporary, so they still have that aspect of mortality. Because the material world means there's beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end, right, in its manifestation, in its existence. Like the atoms of material energy are eternal, but the manifestations of those atoms that are put together, you know, to create the different forms that we see within the material phenomena, that's temporary, right? And that's based on people's illusion, right? So that's why we'll say they're material, because they're manifest because of somebody's material vision. Otherwise, why would they be manifest? Right? Spiritual world is manifest because of the spiritual vision. Right? Does that make sense? But when the devotee deals with it, he's not an illusion. So he sees the temporary manifestation and he sees the eternal. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Right. This qualification that they have surpassed the ocean of birth and death wouldn't be already applicable to Dasyam?
Not necessarily. Because the thing is Dasyam is your serving, so you are a servant no matter where you are. Right? So that's basically you could say that's a fact. Right? But to be a friend, that's actually a dynamic, interactive element of emotion. Does that make sense? So you can be a servant whether you have an affection or not. Like, you know, a man may have servants in his house. They may have an affinity for the interaction with him or not. It can be just a job. And they do their job nicely, they're dutiful, they're good servants. But it doesn't mean that there's any intimacy. Right? Does that make sense? But the intimacy means there has to be more of a basis. Otherwise, he's the master, they're the servant. Okay, that's enough to create the relationship of service there. But it doesn't mean there's any intimacy. Right? Then you have to have something broader. You know, like, let's say, you know, he has his, you know, the house and he does all, but let's say the master has an affinity for horses, right? And so this servant is also very good at horses and also has that same kind of mood. So on that platform, they can be friends, right? Socially, they won't be, but on that platform, they can be friends because there's something common. You know what I'm saying? So here then it's beyond that because the transcendental is the actual common aspect between the internal, external, and marginal potencies and the Lord. Right? Because technically they're all transcendental. Right? The external energy is transcendental to material. You understand? Just material is made out of material energy. Right? Because it's unconscious, so it won't be disturbed by the living entities trying to lord it over matter. Right? Because the spiritual is conscious, so it will not be appreciative of the manifestations being used by the living entities in a materialistic way. Does that make sense? Right? But the material energy is transcendental to the mundane concept. Because the energy is what is beyond. The pillar is made out of, but it's not that compromises or not comprises material energy. Material energy is greatly, vastly unlimited. It's one quarter of the cosmic manifestation. Does that make sense? So it's not that this manifestation that we see, that's the material world. No, that's the manifestation that's created for our perception of reality. Does that make sense? So it's like, depending upon your consciousness, the manifestation is according to what you consider reality. Does that make sense? You know, because one person has his reality but for someone else, that's not real for them at all. They wouldn't even consider it. You know what I'm saying? You know, the one person would consider, you know, I would rather walk, you know, from this point in the city. And someone else wouldn't want to walk at all because you're too exposed. You're too, vulnerable to whoever's there on the street. So they'd rather take their car. You know what I'm saying? So their world is perceived from their car. So everything's about the car. But so they won't see things. Their world won't include what the person who walks. So the person who walks and go through alleys, can go through the market. He'll have all kinds of experiences the person in the car won't have. But the person in the car has experiences that are different than the person walking. You know what I'm saying? So according to the experiences you want, then the manifestation is there. Right? Does that make sense? So according to the modes, there's standard manifestation. So it's not that it's that difficult, right? Does that make sense? So as major, you could say as, you know, your main categories, there's only need of 8,400,000, you know, main manifestations. So, you know, for Maya, that's not such a big deal. Like that. But we become so bewildered by our little corner of that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you have, let's say you have a jungle. So the person who lives in the jungle is very comfortable there. He knows how to move around, where to hide, what to do when animals come, this and that. But you plunk him down in the middle of New York, he's got a problem. Even though it's a jungle, but it's somehow or another, it's not quite the same, constructed in the same way. Right? But you take the man from New York and plunk him down in the jungle, he's got a problem. Right? You know, there's no internet, you know, his phone doesn't work. He's got problems. Right? Does that make sense? Are we clear on that? You know, in other words, we have to be comfortable with being able to understand the eternality and the transcendental element of material, or let's say external Brahman. Right? Because the material energy is transcendental to our illusions of what it is. Right? Maya is not an illusion that she's not servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? So Maya is transcendental. Right? The soul is transcendental. But the consciousness of the soul at this point, the conditioned soul, is not. So the conditioned soul thinks that there is something. It's under the illusion that there's something that's not transcendental. Something that's not Brahman. That's the illusion. Right? So we have to be able to appreciate these fine points. Because if we can appreciate that, then we can simultaneously appreciate that the body of the saintly person is spiritual, but at the same time, it still manifests through the external energy instead of the internal. So it still has the temporariness of the manifestations that the external energy will create. Does that make sense? We can deal with both at once. That's the advantage of a Chintaveda Veda Tattva, is being able to study something analytically, individually, but to be able to apply them functionally as simultaneous. Does that make sense? Others will analyze it separately and apply it separately. Right? But the Gaudiyas, they can analyze it separately, you know, which is the way to get to know it, but they can apply it simultaneously. Does this make sense? That's the uniqueness of the Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Yes. No, it's means it's the soul means one. The body is not becoming spiritual by it changes what it's made out of. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the potato in the market, you know, which is a material object, and the potato after the devotees take it, cooked it, and offered it, you know, it's the same elements. Right? The difference is the chit potency. Right? You know, like, that's why we use the example of iron and fire, or that of electricity. Because iron doesn't change what elements it's made out of. It just changes the effect that you get from it. Right? It's still iron, but it's red hot, so it's as good as fire. Right? So just like the copper wire is as good as electricity, but still it's copper wire. But its functioning is electricity. So you have to deal with the copper wire like electricity, not like copper wire. Because copper wire, you just pick it up and roll it up and do whatever you want with it. But electricity, you don't do that. So it has to be dealt with like that. So it becomes empowered by the internal potency. Right? So it has the potential to be in touch with, because technically the internal and the external are non-different. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of what aspect of that supreme energy is manifest. Does that make sense? So you can say, I'm applying this to the body, because that was the question. But the energy itself can manifest however it likes. Because when Krishna comes and performs his eternal pastimes, what's manifest is the internal potency. Like that. But our body, it is a manifestation of our prarabdha karma, our previous activities. But so our karma is removed, but not so much that the body disappears. Because if you removed all karma, there would be no form, material form, you know, in the material world for the living entity. But because you haven't taken up the consciousness of this transcendental in relationship to the Lord, your spiritual form is also not manifest. So kind of hard to engage the senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. Does that make sense? So what happens is the body is empowered by the chit potency. So because it's like that, it's dealt with like that. Does that make sense? Right. If I bring you some Mahaprasad, right? And there's, let's say, Karela Mahaprasad, and there is, you know, cauliflower and paneer prasad. Okay? Now, according to the tradition, we serve the bitter first and then the richer one, right? Now, with our transcendental vision of understanding and appreciating prasad, can we tell the difference between Karela Mahaprasad and cauliflower and potato Mahaprasad? You can't tell the difference. Yes, but the point is that external manifestation doesn't go away. So the point is you can have the material and the spiritual happening in the same place at the same time. It's not a problem. That's called the Tathastha Shakti. Right? So in other words, the Swarup Shakti, or the one supreme energy of the Lord, has the internal aspect, the external aspect, and that part which can put the two together. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have night, you have day, you have twilight. So it's one person, but there's these three manifestations. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. But there you're dealing with Satchitananda. You know what I'm saying? Well, here you're dealing with, you know, the reflection of that or the shadow of that. So here you're dealing with goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? So it's the same thing, but just one is manifest through the external, one's manifest through the internal. Does that make sense? So you're going to have those manifestations of earth, of water, and all that in the spiritual platform. But they're all conscious. Well, the earth, water, fire, air, ether of the external is not conscious. You know what I'm saying? Just like your scalp is conscious, your hair is not. But it's all part of you. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that the Srup Shakti, there's those aspects that there's conscious, there's the other aspects that are not. But you can tell if somebody touches your hair. You know what I'm saying? But the hair itself is not conscious. Does that make sense? So that's what you're dealing with. It's just the difference in the manifestation. But the principle is the same, because one is you could say, the reflection of the other. Does that make sense? Like that. So the point is that aspect is only useful so that we can tell the difference. As a subject matter itself, it's not of much interest, because how will it be applied? You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna is the all-pervading, you know, supreme, absolute truth. But how do you as an individual relate to that? You understand? Right? So the point is in the spiritual world, it's through love, right? So how is that? What kind of love? You know what I'm saying? So if it's conjugal love, he's a lover. If it's a parental love, he's a son. If it's friendship love, then he's an equal, right? If it's servitorship love, he's the master. So that's manifest through his internal potency. Right? So the Sarup Shakti is making the arrangement, but it's specifically manifested through the Yoga Maya, which will be the superior manifestation of the Sarup Shakti. Right? Because Sarup Shakti includes external, internal, and jivas. Right? Yes, does that make sense? So therefore, it's the same here, is that there's manifestation because of our consciousness. So that's why we appear in a certain place, because our consciousness matches the situation of that place. Right? So the point is we're going to relate to Krishna, but we, being, you know, how you say, how we will relate to the unlimited. There has to be something that we can, has common, that we can relate to. So then that particular form is there, because Krishna is all forms, all manifestations, everything. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter, it's just like you go into a shop, right, and let's say it is a plumbing shop, right? But it's the, you know, biggest in, you know, the northern hemisphere, you know, one of those kind of shops, right, you know? So that means it has every kind of tap and shower head and, you know, sink and bathtub and toilet that there is on the planet. Okay? But which one are you interested in? A specific one. So that's, you can relate to that shop because it has that specific manifestation. Now, let's say you looked online and there was a specific sink you wanted, but then you went to this big, huge thing, and that sink wasn't there. Can you relate to the store? It's the biggest. It's the greatest. It's the most fabulous. It's got the best prices. It's got the, you know what I'm saying? They'll deliver it to your door. But can you relate to it? No, because it doesn't have what you have a nature, an inclination towards. Does that make sense? So the point is God's unlimited. He is all forms. He is, that's what the Purusha Shukta is defining. All legs, all eyes, all arms, all anything, that's all the Lord. But we relate to a specific. Therefore, then there's a, he manifests to us in that way. Because how he manifests to the Brajabhasis and how he manifests to the Vaikuntavasis is different. Same person. Right? That's why we don't make too much distinction. Those that make too, oh, Vishnu, we don't care. But it's the same person. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. You know, the high court judge is talking to other lawyers. What language is he going to use? Right? You know, the legalistic language, and they'll talk about court cases and different things like that. How does he talk to his grandson, who's three? Right? It's a different man. If he comes and manifests his, you know, high court judgeness to his grandson, can the grandson relate? No, not at all. So he has to manifest as the grandfather. But it's not that by being the grandfather, he's also no longer, you know, the high court judge. Right? Does that make sense? And his wife couldn't care less about either of those. You know, she doesn't want to be talked to like a baby, and she doesn't want all this legal jargon. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is that's why it says Krishna manifests through his internal potency. Right? Does that make sense? So the Sarup Shakti and the Supreme Lord are non-different. But to interact, then there's difference. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Is that all right? Did that answer the question? Because it's been so far back. Okay. Yes? Okay.
But yes. When you speak about consciousness, according to our consciousness, we can see the manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
It means, can we say it's according to our desire?
According to our desire, yes.
We can equal consciousness and desire.
Can you equal consciousness and desire? Not exactly. Consciousness is the situation. Then desire is what you do with it. Desire is prajumna, but consciousness will be sankarshan. You know what I'm saying? But we can apply that. That's why it's with proper knowledge. Then your desires, your needs, your actions are in connection with your identity as servant of the Lord. In the material platform, we identify that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Therefore, our desires, our needs, and our endeavors are in line with that. Does that make sense? Okay. So we got into that, is that the idea is to be able to understand these differences, and we're comfortable with that. Then we can discuss what makes the difference between these. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes what you're looking at is the common, and sometimes what you're looking at is the difference. Right? So there's something common, there's something different. So when that is combined, then you get the different aspect. Because you can have the same elements, but how it's put together, you call it differently. Does that make sense? So, you know, you take potatoes, cut them thin, deep fry them, you know, it's a snack. It's not a meal, right? But if you take them and you bake them or boil them like that, you serve them with butter and other things like these things, then it's part of the meal. You understand? Same potatoes. Does that make sense? But how you deal with them will manifest differently. So you're talking about the same 9 items of devotional service. But in this case, there's an intimacy that's not necessarily there in the others. So that's what brings about the friendship. So what we're saying is that intimacy will be based here, he's mentioned, is based on having the common platform of being transcendental. Right? That's where the relationship is based. Because otherwise, before that, you're serving nicely, he's the master, you're the servant, and so you want to please him. But you can find, let's say, in the below the platform of being freed, surpass the ocean of birth and death, you can be serving but expect that Krishna is going to provide all kinds of facilities. So that's not friendship. When I do this, so Krishna should do that. You know, it's like, I'm regular in my devotional service. I chant, I go to Mangal Arati, I try to do everything nicely. Why are all these bad things happening to me? That's not friendship. That's servitude. Because I'm serving, so the master should protect me in this way. Does that make sense? There's a difference. There's a mix there. But not that you don't have pure servitude where that you don't have that element. But we're just saying you can have a mix in these others. But in friendship, then the mix is such that it's not part of the relationship. You know what I'm saying? More than what friendship would be. Is that something? Okay, those devotees who have surpassed the ocean of birth and death, even though they are mortal beings, are eligible to make friends with bliss personified, Sri Hari, in the spiritual world. Right? Because before we were talking about his supremacy, we're the servant, you know, he's the master. But here it says he can make friends with bliss personified. Before we serve the Supreme Lord, but we make friends with bliss personified. You understand? So it's taking a different quality. The servitorship is focusing on sambandha. The friendship is not. Right? The author now describes the characteristics of friendship. The friends of the Lord are fully satisfied, desireless, and always happy. They can constantly offer their pure love to Lord Vasudeva. Instead of pleasing Sri Hari with their humility, fruit of activities, good qualities, best ingredients, or occupational duties, these great devotees simply please him with their affection. Right? It's got nothing to do with nicely arranging and doing all these things. It's just the affection. You can be doing those things. It's not that you'll stop doing those. But it's that that's not, it doesn't become the medium for, you know what I'm saying? The master's there, he's doing something, you're assisting in that, you're doing everything very expertly. That's the basis of your relationship. But if you're with a close friend, you're doing the aspect, but the activity itself is not at all primary in the interaction. Even if you don't have that, you can get by. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So one can also tell, that's where one will say, at least let's say, let's be bold here. Those with more of an understanding will be able to say that the relationship that's not based on external environment will be friendship, you know, have some depth to the friendship. And that friendship, which is defined by the external activities they perform, will be more or less intimate, or what we would call shallow. You understand? So you have a bunch of, you know, punk teenagers, they get together, but, you know, you have to have bicycles or motorcycles, or it has to be a sport, or hanging out in the corner harassing the girls or something. But if they don't have that, they don't have friendship. They couldn't just sit down together and with nothing else to do be comfortable. Right? So it's shallow. So that's why it's not defined, at least in the Vedic, as actual friendship. You know, we'll say they're friends, but technically the friendship is based on a third party. You understand? Their friendship, it's not based on their direct interactiveness. So most people in the world don't have friends. That's why I say I'm being bold here. They don't have friends. They have those who have some common element that we would, in one sense, call it friendship. Right? But it's totally dependent upon the third party element that is the common ground. You know what I'm saying? The devotee, here we're saying the common ground is freedom from birth and death. So the jiva is free from birth and death, or let's say the living entity is free from birth and death. God's free from birth and death. But that's not the medium of interaction. That's the medium of interaction for neutrality. Right? Does that make sense? This is not too subtle, is it? Okay? Right? So, does that make sense? So some people, unless they're watching a movie together, there is nothing to do, or going out to some place and eating. No. For someone who has friendship, those are environments in which you share the friendship. So therefore, it's in this way, it creates the variety. But the friendship is not dependent upon that environment. It's simply the affection. Does that make sense? The other one, that servitorship, how does it function if you're not offering the results of your labor? Or what do you say? You know, humility, fruitive activities, good qualities, best ingredients, occupational duties, without that medium. You know, so we're not saying that it's bad. You know, dealing with that medium as servitorship, that's the whole thing. Then it has substance. So if you say you're a servant and don't use these facilities, how can you identify their servitorship? Right? So it's substance in servitorship, but in friendship it's not so important. You know, it's an environment in which you share the friendship, but it's not that it's an essential ingredient. Does this make sense? Right? You know, that's the point. Like you have, who is it? It's a famous conversation, you know, where two very known personalities, I think it was back in the, it was early 1900s or maybe even the 1800s, where one friend was, you know, slightly troubled in mind. So he went to his friend's house. His friend invited him in. They sat down in the sitting room, one friend in one chair, the other friend in another chair. They sat for 3 hours, didn't say anything, And after 3 hours, then the friend who had come over, you know, the problem, you know, got up and said, thank you for the very nice time and that. It was really great, you know, you're a really good friend. And then left. You know what I'm saying? So the friendship's not dependent upon the invite. It's just there so that you can, you know, that there's some way of, you know, on the mental platform or any some platform of connection. Does that make sense? Yes. Quite being a euphemism. You could probably say real friendship is extremely rare, you know, so it's probably more valuable than platinum, right? You know, more rare than that. You know, it's in other words, it's people don't know what friendship is. If they did, why can't we create communities? Right? You want to create a community, then immediately you have to have a community hall, or you have to have this meeting of the community meeting. No, community just means, hey, you know, come over to dinner or, you know, hang out. You know, you walk by the park. Is anyone ever sitting on the benches there and just talking? No, they're only sitting there if their kids are playing in the park. Right? Kids don't hang out there. And the adults don't hang out there. So from lack of understanding what is friendship, one can't create community, you know. So if you take out actual friendship and take out authority, so if you have authority issues and never experience friendship, then you have some seriously, chronic, socially dysfunctional symptoms. You know what I'm saying? So,
It's also a great obstacle for devotional life.
Yeah, it is. Now, let's say you take an apartment building in New York. Okay? You know, it's, you know, 7 stories. You walk up and down the stairs because there's no elevator. Right? And, you know, there's your door and a cross on the other side because the stair, you know, turns and goes. So it's big enough that there's an apartment on the other side. You've been living in your apartment 20 years. You have never seen and don't even know the neighbors, right? But there's no bad smell coming out of there, and the place doesn't look like it's falling apart, so it's not that nobody lives there or they're dead, right? Okay? But now let us say we go to another part, you know, of town where it's just all immigrants, right? And they live basically right on the street, you know, when they're having, it's summertime, they bring the couch out and place it on the sidewalk. You know, I say, you know what I'm saying? So they interact because you can say they don't have anything, so they interact on the personal level. You know what I'm saying? So there's a sense of community. That's why it's Spanish Harlem or the Black Harlem or, you know, this place here was all Jews at one time, then it was all, you know, Russians, and it was all Italians and like that. So because they came there, congregated, because they could have spread out all over the city. But they all get together because then they can relate and interact. And then when they get it together and become upwardly mobile, then they merge into it, and then they become like the other guys that don't even know who their neighbor is. Right? Then we call them American. But unless they kind of have slightly reddish skin and black hair and don't grow much hair on their face, they're technically not North Americans. You know what I'm saying? Like, real North Americans live on reservations like that. And the European and, you know, Asian immigrants, they live, you know, in the rest of the place, right? On the other side of the fence, right? So, does that make sense? Or, technically, the North Americans live on the other side of the fence and everybody else, you know. Does that make sense? So, you're dealing with big problems there. And every community of the world, basically in their own ethnic environment, has names for this. Does that make sense? They have names for that. It's those persons who don't have deep social interactive skills. right? Every culture has a name for it. You know, I mean, your how you say your, you could say your broadest and most general would be goys, but other than that, then you know, something. Does that make sense? Okay. Goy, short for goyim, which means not Jewish. Like that. But every culture has that, right? You have the, you know, the more local people in the Americas, and then the people who came from Europe, they call them gringos. Like that. You know, so every place has something that means those who don't actually interact properly. They don't know how to interact. Like that. We'll just say it means that they're, you know, it's, you know, some variety of mild xenophobic, you know, how you say, expletive. But it's actually, what's being referred to is their lack of ability to interact. Because if you can interact, they don't identify you that way. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? Like, okay, we're all very clear on this. I don't have to give any really blunt examples. No? Okay. Okay. They perpetually enjoy pastimes of Sri Hari, the ocean of bliss, and are fully satisfied by seeing themselves as his friends. Due to being immersed in the ecstatic ocean of friendship with the Lord, these devotees become overwhelmed with affection for him. They earnestly surrender everything to the Supersoul, Sri Hari, who is like a great ocean of transcendental bliss. Right, so just everything they have are just automatically him. He's the best friend, so therefore everything's just his. So whatever they're doing, it's all connected to the Lord. Right? Okay. That's the fun part about it. You give, how you say, you know, how you say, 35 minutes of background, and then the actual point, you know, you go over in 3 minutes. Right? So that's the, that's the idea. As we go in the courses, you'll find that what we, something like this, we deal with that when you get up to, you know, your like your Bhaktivedanta level and stuff like that kind of thing. Then it doesn't take much to explain it like that. So even though the volume of literature is much greater, it will be much quicker to go through like that. 11. Total surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Hari by offering everything to him and being fully absorbed in him. The glorious symptoms and unique position of the surrendered souls. Oh, and unique position. Oh, no, excuse me. Ah, it's a compound. Yeah. So, the total surrender and the glorious symptoms and unique position of the surrendered soul. The author now describes the characteristics of Atmanivedana. The attainment of the desired goal of the devotees is called Atmanivedanam. So, in other words, getting to that platform is what is desirable. The other aspects are there, because we discussed before, is you have the techniques of what you're using, right? Yashravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevam, Archanam, Bandhanam, all these aspects. But then you have the mentality in which you'll apply them, right? So this, the dasyam, then means that you're seeing everything connected to the Lord, trying to use everything in the Lord's service. The friendship then will take it more intimately, where it's that friendship of whatever situation you're in, then one's fully surrendered and connects everything to the Lord. But then Atmanivedanam is that full surrender, so that's what one is trying to get to. It is achieved when their bodies are fully surrendered to Sri Krishna, and they are totally devoid of the mentality of I and mine. So that means in the friendship there can still be some of that, right? We're not talking about the friendship of the cowherd boys with Krishna in the eternal pastimes, because they're also Atmanivedana. But we're talking about the sadhaka, right? Because we're talking nine processes here in relationship to sadhana bhakti, right? So, yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it could be your madhyam, means your neophyte, then the dasyam would work very nicely, right? But it can go farther. Your madhyam, then the friendship, can work nicely. But then it goes farther, because even into bhava you have those elements. But your atmanivedanam, then we see that it has to be even more, that greater element of surrender. Full surrender is not obtained by other processes of sadhana, and even the best of yogis rarely attain it. Full surrender is known as supreme transcendental devotional service, and it is the state of liberation for those who are living in the material world. Atmanivedana is not obtained by following the instructions of the spiritual master or by studying the scriptures. The devotees simply have to realize full surrender, which is self-manifested within their hearts. So here it doesn't mean that you don't need the spiritual master, but it's not, I'm following his order, therefore I'm getting. Right? Because we're still seeing these aspects of karma. I followed the order, therefore I should get the result. Right? And we say, if you're Krishna conscious, then you'll be happy. You know, you follow this, you'll get through the path of birth and death. You'll come to the eternal platform. All these things have an element that I'm following because of something I'll gain. But here it's not a matter of I follow the order of the spiritual master, it's I surrender to. So there's a difference. Right? So here it's not, that means none of the other aspects are going to create that. Right? You can, good proper habits, good devotional attitude, the humility, all these different things. You can gain so much knowledge from studying the scriptures, realization from applying it. But the Atmanivedanam, his point is that it's self-manifest. Right? So by Krishna's grace, one can become. Right? In other words, you can, by your sadhana and endeavor, elevate yourself to the Madhyama platform. Right? Up to Asakti. But to get from Asakti to Bhava, that's only by the Lord's grace. Does that make sense? So that's the point. You can't come to the Uttama platform by your sadhana. Right? I forget where that's mentioned.
It's also a nectar devotion.
Nectar devotion.
The how is described as a ray of the sun which illuminates everything. And
okay, yes.
Describe the qualification that this is by blessing of Krishna.
Yes. Does that make sense? In other words, you're making the endeavor before, and Krishna being pleased with the endeavor, he's still giving, that's why you're advancing. But it's not because what you're doing of the Uttam platform. It's the attitude. So that sense of full surrender, it's not what you're doing. It's the mentality in which it's done. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Because otherwise it's like, remember in the discussion before between Asakti and Bhava, the beginning stages of Bhava and Asakti, there's not much difference in explanation. But one's on the Madhyam platform, one's on the Uttam platform. But it mentions that as one platform. So you could also take it as an Uttam platform. But then it's the Uttam where one's not liberated, and then there is liberated. Right? So then you could take Asakti being the Kanista aspect of this, you know, aspect of Bhava. You know, the beginning stages of Bhava is the Madhyam, and then when it comes fully to Rati, when there's that full attachment or attraction to Krishna, then you could say that's the Uttam aspect of Bhava. Does that make sense? So you can't extend it like that.
In the progression between Sakya and Dasyam and Atmanivedana, it's mainly a question of attitude.
Yes, it's a matter of attitude. It's just that full surrender. But it's not a matter, I'm going to surrender. No, it's just surrendering.
Yes. Self-manifested.
Yes. You know, it's just like you see Draupadi. She's holding onto the cloth, she's praying to Krishna, all these different things are there. But at one point, she just fully surrenders. Right? You know, because the other, it's based on what you do, then he can reciprocate. But if he fully surrenders, full surrender, what can you reciprocate with? Right? Otherwise, other than full reciprocation. You know, if you surrender, that aspect of surrender, you know, you can deal with, but that full surrender, you know, it has no boundaries. You know what I'm saying? Like the person is very surrendered on Sankirtan, but when he comes back to the temple and takes prasad, he may not be. You know what I'm saying? But this full surrender means that any time, at any place, and anything, it's the surrender's fault. Does that make sense? Right? So it's not based on the activity. The author further describes full surrender. A fully surrendered soul does not think about, work for, or search after his own personal benefit, right? To advance, to become self-realized, to develop love for Krishna. He's going beyond that. He just, he surrenders his mind to the super soul, Sri Hari, and constantly enjoys in the ocean of his own spiritual happiness. The devotees become free from the ocean of material existence, which is born from the three modes of nature. Right? Again, just to bring up so that it's not a confusion, why super soul, right? Because that was the confusion before. Because then here we're talking about Krishna. But it's super soul, Sri Hari. Because the point is the Lord in the material body is situated within the heart. Right? In the spiritual form, you're there in his company. So he's in his natural state as Bhagavan is manifest in front. It's only because we've come to the material world that the Lord being manifest in the front, we won't care, so why should he manifest in that way? But it's not that he will be separated from the living entity. So he enters the heart and sits there. So the living entity is always with the Lord and reciprocating with the Lord. Just one, you understand that, but the other you may not. You understand? So that if we use the term paramatma, that can mean that that surrender can happen before it's come to the actual, perfection of, that proper love, or proper attraction or attachment, right? Because at Rati, or at your Purva Rag, where the attachment or attraction to Krishna is complete, I say attraction, not attachment, but attraction is complete. It's all-encompassing. It's samadhi, right? Then you can actually interact with Krishna. Right? Because his consciousness of you and his attraction to the living entity is already complete. It's always been like that. We're the one that's not interacting. You understand? Because it means in the process, how does it work? The boy, he woos the girl. Right? He already has that attraction. But he has to invoke it in the girl. Does that make sense? Like that, Does that make sense? So Krishna already has the affection. We're the ones that are, looking elsewhere. Yes. It will happen automatically. If one understands that's what one is, one is trying to elevate oneself to. But it's not that the sadhana will create it. But the sadhana will create that, proper standard of purity, proper standard of knowledge, proper amount of piety, devotional piety, that then this can be self-manifested. You know what I'm saying? So you have, there's also these things of the simultaneous is where the confusion comes. If it's one or the other, there's not a problem. But it's where, means devotional service is not dependent upon the performance of the activities. Right? But it's based on, but without performing it, you won't get it. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, how do you express the affection or the desire except through the medium of the activities? But it's not the activities that gets it. It's not because the guy gave the roses to the girl that therefore it's that. It's that because he wanted to show that affection, so then the roses worked. But it's not because of the roses. You know what I'm saying? I mean, unless we're also dealing on that shallow platform we were discussing before. Like that. Does that make sense? But it's still taken as a symptom. Does that make sense? Okay. The devotees... Okay. The devotees become free. Yeah, so when we say the super soul Sri Hari, because also in the pure unalloyed devotees, they're always thinking of Krishna in the heart. But at the same time, he's manifest in front of them. But until that platform, then he's within the heart. But as one advances, as you develop your attachment for Krishna, then it's Krishna who's manifest in the heart. But as you don't have that affection, it's super soul who's manifest in the heart. So if we say super soul, it simply means Krishna in the heart. But depending upon how you surrender, he's manifesting as Vishnu or as Krishna. You understand? So by doing that, it shows all the different levels. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right? Because then it's accessible. Right? Because if we say he fully surrendered his mind to, you know, Braja Krishna, who is, you know, manifest in his heart, you know, then it's kind of like, okay, well, that part's not for us. But you can surrender the super soul in the situation we're in now. Does that make sense? The devotees become free from the ocean of material existence, which is born from the three modes of material nature, when they drown themselves in the unlimited nectarian ocean of Sri Hari. So, you know, no interest in the material at all. From that time, they do not care about the happiness derived from merging into the Brahman effulgence, nor following the rules and regulations of the Vedas. Rather, everywhere they look, they perceive only Sri Krishna, who is the personification of complete bliss. Such person, because otherwise, the Brahman effulgence regulation of the Vedas, so that you look at something, right? Let us say I have some antique yajna paraphernalia, and it's sitting very nicely on a table. And I bring in a Vedic Brahmana. What's he going to see? What are the opportunities? Right? Doing a yajna. Okay. Now let's say I have the same setup and we have a curator from the Smithsonian Institute. What are we going to?
Exhibitions.
Right? An exhibition. Wow, look at this ancient, you know, thing of the, you know, how you say the Rig Veda, you know, how you say Hindus of the, you know, Kush Valley, you know, like that. And so, you know, that's what he sees. Right? But now it is saying the person on the platform, Atmani Vedanam, what will he see? He doesn't see something for himself. Right? Or let's take the difference between these Vedic Brahmins. Let us take, there's a Karmakanda Brahmin, and there's a devotee. Okay? So the Karmakanda will see, I can do a yajna, elevate myself to the heavenly planets, and the devotee will see, I can do, you know, a yajna according to the Pancharatric rules within Archana to please the Lord. Right? Now the Atmani Vedana is, they're just going to see the personality of Godhead there, not some process, not some result. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? The Lord is sacrificed. He's around. So, therefore, you know, and then just the Lord. Like the gopis see a black tree and they see, you know, the two-armed form of Krishna. Right? It's not that they can't tell it's a tree. But then, you know, because otherwise why don't they bump into them? Right? You know, but, you know, so the point they there, but then it comes Krishna. So they're seeing Krishna. So when they embrace the tree, they're embracing Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. Right, so they're saying they don't, about the happiness derived from Brahman or following the regulations of Vedas, all these things aren't important to them. Right? Like for us, we're talking here the things and splitting the points between the philosophical aspects and, you know, becoming, you know, maybe inspired or maybe falling asleep. You know, but that's the Brahman platform, right? But it's Saguna Brahman, it's Krishna. But we become inspired by these elements of knowledge and other aspects like that. You know what I'm saying? So it has the knowledge, oh wow, you know, like that. Or by doing this, and that, you know, the benefits that will come, or different aspects like that. Does that make sense? So the Atmani Vedana is beyond that. It just sees Bhagavan, that's all.
can you say that, for example, for this distinction, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, every living entity is surrendering to one of these aspects?
Yes, everyone's surrendering to one of these aspects. The difference is within the material world, everybody's surrendering to Krishna as Brahman. But because they don't know that, they're an illusion. So that's why we call it material. But otherwise, they're interacting with dead matter. But they're inspired by this dead matter. Where does that inspiration come from? It comes from the Lord. Because the Lord, as Saguna Brahman, He is the quality they're looking for. Right? You know, the beauty in the painting. He is the beauty in the painting. It's not that the oils and the canvas and all that, that's making the beauty. If it was, then, you know, people would just go in and roll on the ground in ecstasy in the art supply store. Right? Because it's full of canvas and oils and everything like that, you know? Does that make sense? So, yeah. So the point is it's Krishna's saguna quality of Brahman that they're attracted to. So in that painting, then they are able to see that quality of aesthetics or beauty, right? That's because the elements that are there, you know, one is those elements can manifest it, right? So the canvas and the oils can manifest beauty. And they have been, so that's following a law. And because they've been organized in such a way, you know, according to the law of what's aesthetics. So therefore, then something is gained from it. So it's not the painting. Right? The painting is simply a manifestation of those forms and activities, you know, and situations that manifest that quality of beauty. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, your, you know, paintings, you know, top painting the Louvre, then the reason that they're special is because they're closest to the laws governing aesthetics through the painting process. You understand? Because otherwise, you know, everybody is going out and doing something, right? You know, you go into every little back alley there in Paris, and somebody is trying to do something, right? But it's not ending up there in the Louvre. Why? Because it's not following enough rules that people can see Krishna. So when you stand there in front of the painting, you know, the people that the lights are on, it's there in its own little area, and the people are all standing there and so absorbed, they're seeing Krishna. But they think it's the painting. You know, they think, does that make sense? So the point is the, you know, the artist, you know, your artists, then they were simply the instrument for assisting the internal potency in manifesting those, qualities, or let's say, no, those forms that the quality of beauty could be manifest through, right? But we'll say, no, he did it, you know? Does that make sense? So we'll say it's a Rembrandt, but he was the instrument in it. So you could therefore, because the servants, just like Arjuna is given credit for the victory in the battle of Kurukshetra, but he's only the instrument. Krishna actually was the victor. But he appreciates giving the credit to the instrument, or the servant. So therefore, it's not a problem for Krishna that it's called a Rembrandt or a Da Vinci or a Van Gogh or anything like that. He doesn't have any problem with that. The problem is that nobody knows that he's not the doer, he's only the instrument. Right? So Arjuna is glorified by those persons who understand he was the instrument. You know, those who think he's the doer, then okay, it was a pretty good job, but you know, also nowadays, you know, we have generals who are doing some, you know, pretty good stuff. Right? Does that make sense? So that element, that eternal element, that's what's the actual. So that's Brahman. You know what I'm saying? Just the building itself then, you know, there's more, there's so many elements that can manifest aesthetics. Right? So then people will appreciate the building. Right? But, you know, a piece of glass has minimal amounts of things that it can manifest aesthetics. Therefore, the little pyramid in the front, many have a problem with. Right? Because it doesn't, it doesn't have the quality to manifest as many attributes as the building does. You know what I'm saying? It's a different medium. Does that make sense? You know, so everybody is dealing with Brahman. There's not a living entity that's not. Right? So the animal is walking along and this and that and then find something to eat. So for them, it means, you know, how you say, satisfaction from eating or nourishment or whatever else is they're seeing in that morsel of food. But that's Krishna. But they don't understand it's Krishna, and they don't understand the manifestation is through the is of the internal potency that is manifest through the external as the reflection. You know what I'm saying? That's why when you deal with it, you don't get any satisfaction because you're dealing with the reflection. You understand that you stand there, you can look at the picture and all that. It's nice, but then you walk away, then it's not there anymore. Right, because there was no connection to the Lord. But if you understand the beauty of this painting is coming because of the Lord, right? Then there's a satisfaction that even the greatest, you know, art connoisseur can't gain.
Because of relationship.
Yes, because of a relationship. Because technically, what is a relationship with that? Do you have a relationship with Rembrandt? Do you have a relationship with the oils or the canvas? No. You can look at it with your eyes. But that's where it ends. But Krishna, you have a relationship with. So it's not even just when you look at the picture, then when you turn and anything else, you know, that the garbage can is, you know, does such a nice job. That's because it's Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, this big garbage can, this funny little thing to put the things through, you know, like that. A garbage can hold a lot, so the all-accommodating potency is nicely manifest, but the aperture in which you get the garbage inside is not. And so therefore, you know, it's lacking. It's not a proper manifestation of, you know, the forms required for accommodation to be manifest. You know, or it is, but then you have to touch it. So then purity can't be manifest through that. Because the idea of the garbage is put all the dirty things in one place so the rest of the place is pure. But to do that, you have to make yourself dirty. Right? Some because they don't want to look at it. You know what I'm saying? So that's nice. So then, you know, it looks very nice and aesthetics is good, but then the problem is purity is compromised. So if you can get something that has the purity and the aesthetics, then, you know what I'm saying, it works. Does that make sense? So well, it's only dealing with Brahman. But the point is the materialists don't see that. They're an illusion. And then the devotees do see that. So that's why then we discuss it, because it is a very valuable and valid method of upliftment until one gets to Atma Nivedanam. And at that point, it's not necessary, because then you're seeing directly the personality of Godhead in front of you at all times, or in the heart. Right? So the Brahman aspect isn't what's... Because the quality... Like beauty, we're appreciating the beauty in the painting. But the beauty is Krishna. But now Krishna, does he have his own beauty? Right. So that means Krishna will be more beautiful than the Mona Lisa. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, we'll look at seeing Krishna. Well, actually, the real beauty of the Mona Lisa is in the quality of Krishna. But the personal Atma Nivedanam here, well, see, you know, it's a thing, a medium of beauty, and so then they'll think of Krishna and his three, you know, his, you know, threefold bending form, you know, the color of a, you know, a fresh monsoon cloud with his curly hair and placing the flute to his lips. So the focus will just for that moment to catch that quality and go immediately to Krishna. It's like simultaneous. Right? For us, then we're starting there, and then we're moving it, and then we're eventually getting to Krishna, either by some thought longer thought process, or, you know, taking a lifetime to move the process. But for the person on Atmanivedana, it's basically simultaneous. Same point, that's why the process doesn't change. It's just, it happens quickly. You know what I'm saying? You're practicing something, so you get the thing there, you get the knife right, you get the balance, you know, you get your fingers there, you curl them back so you don't cut your fingers off, you get to try to get the thing, you know, and then you sit there and you cut, you know, and do all that, you know? But the chef just, you know, picks up the knife and goes like this while talking to you, hey, this and that. It's like, because they're of practice. You know what I'm saying? So it just happens like that. But the other person, it has to go through the process. So sadhana is when you take it through the process, mechanically, right? And this is talking about when the process is not mechanical anymore, it's just automatic. So it's the same thing. So there's technically no difference between all these. So to try to say that there's a difference in all these things and therefore we're more advanced, so we have a different, no, there's no difference. It's just more advanced means it happens more spontaneously, and less advanced means it happens more mechanically. You know what I'm saying? So even the prema of the residents of Vaikuntha, the prema itself, its manifestation is spontaneous, but they prefer it through the form of rules. You understand? So their taste is through rules, while in Braj it's not through rules. But love is love. It still has its spontaneous aspect. They want to just naturally serve the Lord. So that's why you can talk to a Sri Vaishnava about spontaneity, and they understand it. But to them, it won't be the, you know, rag bhakti. For us, it means, you know, which beyond the rules, because their taste is rag within the rules. Right? So it simply means that it's not because of the rule that then they're doing it. They're doing it because they spontaneously like, but they want to express it through the rule. Well, the Brajbasi doesn't require the expression through the rule to express their affection. Right? Forms will still be there, but it's not the rule that makes what's important. Do we catch the differences here? Right? You know, because it's all about the difference, right? Like that? Isn't that the same? Right? Was it Viva la Difference or something? Yeah, so it's all about the difference. Like that, because that's where rasa is. But to break means you also have the intimacy is about all about the common. So here we're seeing the common between ourself and the Lord, but we're seeing the difference between material and spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Remember before he was talking about gyan and vigyan. Gyan means to be able to tell the difference. Oh no. Were we discussing it here in class? Gyan means to be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit. Right? Vigyan means understanding the relationship between us as spirit and the Lord as spirit. You understand? So one is seeing the difference and the other is seeing how to put them together. It means, of course, you already understand there's a difference. There's a difference between you and the Lord. But, you know, so, does that make sense? So, the soul and matter, that difference, the material world, the spiritual world, that's gyan, right? Vigyan, then, is how to serve the Lord, right? The connection between us and the Lord, right? But then we'll use gyan again, that, you know, the varnashram used for the Lord, that's spiritualized, that's sanatana dharma, the varnashram not used for the Lord, that's material. You know, so all these things where we're splitting off the spiritual and material, that's the gyan. Vigyan is that's already accepted, and now it's how to connect that spiritual position to the Lord. Right? Because the other is only an external medium. You know what I'm saying? The occupational duties connected to the Lord. The occupational duty is a material thing that's been connected to the Lord. So it's the connected to the Lord that's important. So how do I, as the Lord's servant, connect it to Him? So that's where that's Daiva Varnashram. Right? The rules and regulations are already accepted, but we understand they're aparavidya. But they're connected. Then that makes it daivavarnasha. And if we just see the rules and regulations without seeing the spiritual, right? In other words, it's not actually jnana. Right? Then that's why the Upanishads say it's avidya. We'll say, no, it's Vedic literature, but it'll say it's avidya. It's not connected to transcendence, it's ignorance. If it's connected to transcendence, then it's aparavidya. But what's connecting it is the paravidya, the transcendental. Is this alright? Right. Do we understand why we do this hair splitting? So that we can actually see what's the actual devotion and what's not. Because even though it may be hair splitting, remember, if you split a hair 100 times and then split it again one of those parts 100 times, that's how big we are. Right? So, therefore, that small of splitting hair, if it's pointing out the transcendental, you know, it's fine. Like that. So it's just, if it's connected. Just the split, that's not important. You know, if we have a taste for gyan, that's important. But if we don't, does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Can we break down this tree by the 5 levels of consciousness of the devotee?
Break down this tree.
Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedana, the levels of like Anamai up to Anamai.
No, all these are, see, you're all these are devotional, so they're all Anandamai. But what we're basically bringing out is that what may be the elements of mix that will be there. But the point is, unless it's anandamoy, it's not devotional service. But in performing devotional service, there may be a mix of these other dharmartha, kama, and moksha. You understand? So, to that degree that's mixed, then that means it has that material element. So when that becomes reduced, then we're talking, you know, that it starts to come up. So here we're talking about how much it's, you know, in other words, one is we're taking the material and that's inspiring, that we're connecting it to the Lord, right? The other is that the material is not so much the point, it's the connection to the Lord, but it's not necessarily that intense, right? You know, it's just there. The other is the Atmanivedana, and that's fully dynamic towards the personality of Godhead. You know what I'm saying? They're all common because the activity is basically going to look similar. Right? You know what I'm saying? Is that the person, you know, has a pot and a spoon and puts vegetables inside, puts it on a fire and cooks it for Krishna. Mother Yashoda does exactly the same thing. You know, so that's why all these three, you make a distinction within the fine points. That's the weakness in the modern, is they can't tell the difference in fine points. So therefore things that should be grouped together, they can't, because they can't see the common. And things that should be different, they can't see the difference because they can't tell the fine. So that's why it's always speculative, you know, which is, so according to one's modes, one makes something more prominent or something less prominent. Right? That's why it's called speculative. Well, the Shastra, it's not speculative. We may speculate on it, but the knowledge itself is not speculative. But in the modern, the knowledge itself is speculative, then we'll speculate on that. Right? So in other words, good knowledge is that knowledge which allows everybody else to speculate really well on it. Right? And if no one can do anything with it, then, you know, no one's interested. Does that sound sense? Yeah. Rather, everywhere they look, they perceive only Sri Krishna, who is the personification of complete bliss. Such persons may reside in one place or wander here and there out of their own will. Since they are fully satisfied by knowledge of the Supersoul, Sri Hari, they wander about, detached, inert, and without companions. Because there's nothing here. They're only existing here, but their actual real existence or consciousness is in the spiritual world. So that's why I mentioned the liberated soul. So they're functioning within with their spiritual form in the spiritual world. So here, if they stay alone, whether they move about, you know, whether they're with people or without people, it doesn't really matter. Because they're always with people. If you're with Krishna in the spiritual world, there's plenty of people, right? Because that's one of the 64 qualities of Krishna. He's always surrounded by loving devotees. So they're never alone. So in reality, for a real devotee, there's no such thing as nirjan bhajan. Right? That's why they speak so strongly against it. Because the point is unless you're in the Lord's pastimes, where you're always surrounded by the devotees of the Lord, there's no question of being alone in the material world. Because you're not alone there. But the person who, as a sadhana, tries to get to the position of advancement in devotional service by being alone, they've missed the point. No, being alone, nirjan bhajan, is just a symptom of someone who is already in that association, so he's not interested in association here. Does that make sense? So it's different. So therefore, they can do that. Detached, inert, and without companions. Inert means non-reactive. There's nothing in the material world that makes them react to it. Right? Something inert doesn't respond to any other kind of chemicals or that. You know what I'm saying? Like you put acid into glass, nothing happens. Put acid into water, it explodes. Right? So the water is not inert. Glass is. So just non-reactive. They move through the world. There's nothing here that inspires them. You know what I'm saying? To act within the material sphere. But everything there, they see Krishna. So they're always surrounded by Krishna. So they're never alone. Right? They're always attached to Krishna, always interactive with Krishna, and always associating with those devotees on that platform in Krishna's associates of Krishna. Right? But on the material platform, you'll see them as detached, inert, and without companions. Therefore, Jarabharat will seem a bit strange. Right? Or the Python Sadhu, or, you know, like this. The author further describes the subject. Those who naturally chant the holy names and characteristics of Sri Hari become fully satisfied due to attaining their desired goal. It appears that the incessant flow of their spontaneous spiritual happiness is forcefully ejected from their bodies on the pretext of laughing, and it is sweated from their bodies on the pretext of their bodily hair standing on end. Right. So it's just manifestations of that same spiritual ecstasy. Like remember before is that there's only love for Krishna, right? It means when you say ananda, it means love for Krishna. It means you can have it in its neutral state, you know, which is useful in removing one from the sick state of having applied that love into matter, right? But on the transcendental platform, then it's manifest through all these different things, so that it's simply the love that's manifest, and it appears on the pretext of laughing, or hair standing on end, or crying, or being stunned, or... Does that make sense? You know, the love manifests, Krishna deals with Krishna in a particular rasa. Is that... We see? So, it's the same thing, it's just it has unlimited manifestations. Right? So all the variety here, then is all just the different kinds of attachment of Krishna, of the natural love that the living entity has for Krishna, that's not applied to Krishna, that's applied into their own material environment. But, as we discussed before, you can't get away from Krishna, so what it is that they do love about the material energy is still Krishna. Like that. But the point is that so all the manifestations are there because of that. Right? Where does a bird like to sit? Right? On the ground or in the tree? Right? So birds love trees. So the love is manifest as trees. You understand? You understand? Like that. You know, the fish is water. You know, the man likes something, you know, a little in between, right? He has a swimming pool and he has his trees, right? Is that so? 12. While describing knowledge as subordinate to devotional service, the author explains how the performance of the 9 types of devotional service control Lord Krishna. The author's realization about the Lord's position as the non-dual personality of Godhead, and the symptoms and results of pure knowledge. So here he's going to describe how the performers of the 9 types of devotional service control Krishna by performing how knowledge is subordinate to devotional service. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, how do you control Krishna if one doesn't understand how knowledge is subordinate to the devotion? Right? Because the point is now, how much knowledge can the living at 1/10,000th the tip of the hair have? Right? You know, it can be quite a bit, but still. How much knowledge does Krishna have? Right, so knowledge is a common ground, but will you be able to say it's enough to actually generate friendship? Right? Means the beggar, he has his 10 pice. And the Kraupati is walking through the market, you know, with, you know, 10 lakhs in his vegetable bag, you know, with a few potatoes and cauliflower in the plot and some funky old ratty bag, right? So that nobody will know, right? Does that make sense? But can they be friends? You understand? One has 10 pice, one has the other. On the base of that, not so much. You understand? But affection, that doesn't have a price. That doesn't have a volume. You know what I'm saying? So on that platform, the small, tiny living entity can control the unlimited supreme by affection. Does that make sense? So that's the medium. That's why knowledge, rules and regulations and all this, these aren't the substance of devotional service. They're only the medium of devotional service. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So he's going to describe how through devotional service you control Krishna by explaining the knowledge of how, the understanding that knowledge is subordinate to devotion. Because if that's not understood, one will take that knowledge is devotion, right? Just like someone will take that karma is devotion. Right? You know what I mean? The practical person, its work is devotion. Right? Isn't that? Work is worship. Right? That's the thing. And, right? That's 1984. No? So then you have for the jnani, knowledge is worship. Right? Knowledge is Krishna. Does that make sense? But you have to be able to go beyond the activity and the knowledge to affection. But it's not that you don't use your knowledge and skills in Krishna's service, right? Mother Jashoda is, if Radharani cooks and she never cooks exactly the same twice, and she's been cooking since time immemorial, and she's going to be cooking for time immemorial, that means she knows the science of cooking pretty good. You would have to admit that fact, right? And, you know, so it's not that, you know, every year a new vegetable comes out or something like that. So, you know, here we have, you know, 15, 20 different vegetables, and there they have unlimited vegetables because she ran out of recipes. So she has to create a new vegetable so that she can apply the same recipes, you know, to... Does that make sense? So it's not that knowledge and skill is not used, but it's not the basis of the devotion. The devotion is simply, is devotion stands on its own. It's simply the expression of love between the Lord and the devotee. That's all. The skill and the knowledge is simply a medium. It's subordinate to the expression of that. Right? That's why it's necessary. But at the same time, it's never primary. Right? So, for the person who is who means will describe how, you know, like here, that section on Pritumaraj and the Bhagavatam. It's constantly in the verses, in the purport, it's supported by the acharyas, it's being spoken by the Supreme Lord Himself. How important it is to engage Varna, by following Daiva Varnashram, you can please the Lord and come to the platform and go back to Godhead. Right? So the emphasis is on engaging your knowledge and activities and in efforts in the Lord's service. Right? And so, but once we've accepted that, because we're going to do activities anyway, so now it's a matter, are we going to do it for ourselves or do it for God? So the first thing is, we're going to do it for God. Right? But now that we've accepted that, then you can point out that it's not the activities that are as important as the mood. Because otherwise we'll think, you know, I got up, you know, I chanted my rounds, you know, the guy came up to talk to me, I didn't even acknowledge his existence, because, you know, hey, it's Brahma Muhurta. Well, you know, what are we talking from about? You know, this is time for the holy name. You know, I went to the Mangalartik, I did this and that. You know, all these other guys, they get so distracted by all this other stuff. I was just, you know, but the point is he's missed the point. So therefore, he will be very dry and very hard-hearted. You know, purified, advanced, but hard-hearted. Why? Because he thinks the ritual is the devotional service. Right? But it's not. It's subordinate to, it's the medium for devotional service. That's the point. So you can't, just like the Lord and his energy are separate, but you can't separate them. So in the same way, the devotional service and the mediums to express it, you can't separate, but at the same time you can. You know what I'm saying? If we can't tell the difference between matter and spirit, then we have to separate it. But as soon as you are not worried about matter and spirit, you're only dealing with spirit, we don't have to separate them. You know what I'm saying? That's why we'll make the difference. Okay, here's Sundini, here's Sambit, here's Ladini potency. But on the spiritual platform, they don't make that distinction. You know what I'm saying? Except as a person. Right, they can tell the difference between Radharani and Purnamasi, right? Does that make sense? But it's not that they distinguish by, you know, this knowledge of the potencies. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes, because it's the affection, yeah. Because you can't bind him by an endeavor or by knowledge. You'll never be able to catch him. The jnanis have been chasing Krishna with their knowledge, or the yogis with their mystic powers for millions of lifetimes, and they still can't catch. You know, they don't even get close to, it says, the ray of effulgence from his toenail, let alone him as the, you know, full person. Is that, yeah, so that's there. So it's the devotion that does. So when it's just that devotion, that surrender is so complete. Because it's there. She goes to tie, and it doesn't work. So what does she think? Get more ropes. Right? So the activity is prominent. It's a pastime, of course, because she's doing it thinking that my son is naughty, so he has to be disciplined. Otherwise he'll grow up to be bad, and if he's bad, then his whole life will be miserable. Right? So she out of affection for the child is disciplining the child. Right? So, but when at the end it's just that full surrender and love for Krishna, you know, seeing that, then Krishna, he relents, and then, you know, she's able to tie the knot. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Right? Okay, so here we're getting into the technical, and then the author's realization about the Lord's position as the non-dual personality of Godhead. Right? Non-dual means there's no difference between Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. You know, there's no difference because they're all technically just aspects of Bhagavan. Like that. So being able to appreciate that, then one can tell the difference between the material and the spiritual, and the gradations within the spiritual. Right? And the symptoms and results of pure knowledge. Right? So real pure knowledge means this full connection to Krishna. Right? But you have to be able to distinguish what's the pure knowledge and what has other aspects. In summarizing his description of devotional service, the author now explains that knowledge is subordinate to and dependent on bhakti. Joyful persons regularly engage in the 9 types of devotional service, namely, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, worshipping, offering prayers, serving as a servant, serving as a friend, and fully surrendering everything unto the Lord. They easily control Sri Krishna by their own strength without the help of any mantra or remedy. Transcendental knowledge automatically manifests in the pure hearts of non-envious persons who travel on this path of devotional service. Right? So automatically means shows its independence. Why is that word automatically used? Some will take it automatically meaning that the result of the work. You understand? So we say, Prabhupada says, you chant and automatically you'll develop that spontaneous love for Krishna. Then a complaint may come up that, no, it's by your endeavor that spontaneity will come. Right? So you have to endeavor within spontaneous practices to get the spread. But then that's saying that Raganuga sadhana is the cause of bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So that means my sadhana is the cause of pure devotion. But it mentioned before that phala bhakti has no limbs. Right? Upaya bhakti means where you're trying to get a goal. That does. That's what pulls you out, and the cultivation of that which attracts you to. Right? Pulls you out of the material and attracts you to Krishna. Right? So sadhana means that, you know, the balance between those activities that pull you out, those activities that attract you to. Right? So it's not because you perform the rule that you're becoming attracted. It's because of the devotion. Krishna is pleased, therefore knowledge and detachment are coming. Right? This is what we're meaning. Why the importance of being able to see the difference. Without help of any mantra or remedy, automatically. So when Prabhupada says automatically, he's talking about a very highly elevated philosophical point. You know, he's not just saying you do this automatically, you get that. He's talking about you do this, Krishna will be pleased, so automatically you get. So that's rag. Right? That's rasa. So that's why when Prabhupada says everything's in his books, he means it. You know, and that when he says he's given everything in his books, he means it. There's nothing left out. They consider the material world to be illusory, just as in the darkness one mistakenly considers a rope to be a snake. These enlightened persons are able to understand the absolute truth, the Supreme Brahman, who is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Right. So now here in that, he's given the point and shown and corrected the doubt that may arise. Right. Point. They consider the material world to be illusory, that it's not real, because material world isn't real, because there is no material world. There's only Brahman. So these enlightened persons are able to understand the absolute truth, the Supreme Brahman, who's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So they're able to see Krishna in everything. So there is no illusion. But you think that he's not in everything, that's the material world, so that's illusion. So the same object can be illusory or Brahman. It's actually Brahman. If you don't see it as Brahman, it's illusory. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's one or the other. There's the one, and if you don't see it like that, then the other naturally manifests. It's subordinate. Darkness is subservient to light. Right? If you bring light, darkness goes away. But if you bring darkness, light doesn't go away. You know, maybe in the sci-fi it does, but it doesn't in reality. Does that make sense? When this transcendental knowledge is awakened in the devotees' hearts, the varieties of material energies are no longer visible, and the path of attachment and the path of detachment are immediately destroyed. Material energies, because the material energies means the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, because that's how it's manifested through. Right? No, one no longer sees that. One simply sees the Lord's energy. One sees Brahman. So we can see Saguna Brahman means unlimited quality. So you can see the unlimited, you can see the manifestations of the unlimited qualities of the Lord. That you can see, but you're dealing with Brahman. You're not dealing with illusion. Right? Does that make sense? So when we talk about the Brahman platform, we don't really have a contention with the concept that the impersonalists are after. We have a contention with how they think that, you know, what is here that is actually Brahman is illusion. Because if they say everything's Brahman, is everything is Brahman. But they then after saying that, say whatever you see is illusion. But if everything's Brahman, that means what you're seeing is also Brahman. So they can't, so their realization of Brahman is, you know, for the Mayavadis is non-existent, basically speaking. One or two little things, but, you know, nothing of substance. When this, so the path of detachment, attachment and detachment of karma and jnana, those are both destroyed. Because it's not that the knowledge itself has a standing or the endeavor and result itself have a standing. No, that's illusion that they have. Means it's all Brahman. So whether it's activity Brahman, whether it's knowledge Brahman, it doesn't matter. At that time, only the eternally blissful, effulgent, pure, and complete Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with His spiritual parts and parcels, living entities whose natures are similar to us, remain eternally manifest. So all He sees are the Lord everywhere, and the individual interacting with the Lord. Does that make sense? The man's out walking his dog, thinking, you know, dog is man's best friend. So, you know, the dog is, you know, very comfortable because he has a, you know, a supporter and all that. And the man's very comfortable because he has a loyal servant and all that. But the point is the dog's seeing the shelter in the master, but that shelter is Krishna. You understand? So, and the man is seeing that loyalty in the dog, but that loyalty is Krishna. So, the person on this platform is seeing the souls. You know, it's not that you can't see the bodies, but what he's seeing is, the interaction between these two souls with the Lord, one based on loyalty and one based on shelter. So that's what he sees. Does this make sense? How that works? On the mundane platform, you get a similar thing. Let us say, you have something, you know, some material object that you're very, very attracted to, right? So when you see the object, then that attraction is overwhelming. So you don't necessarily see the object how others see the object, but it's the same object. Does that make sense? So you'll say this is great and this and that. Another person will say, well, that's no big deal. You know what I'm saying? Yes? The small kid sees the tricycle as something really, really, I mean, this is good. This is happening, right? You know, it's all you got, you know, as soon as, you know, things are over and you finish, you know, had to go through getting bathed and dressed and fed and all these things and fussed with, now you're free to go out and do something real, like right on your tricycle, right? So, like that. But then the guy comes riding by on his motorcycle. How does he see the tricycle? Right? Something, you know, very childish and not desirable. Or he gets an idea, hey, I can make a three-wheeled motorcycle. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So he doesn't see it in the same, but it's the same matter, the same facts. You understand? So we look at everything, And as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the phrase, the sensuous gaze of inspection. So we look at it and see, what can I get out of this? How can I enjoy this? You know, okay, the brickwork is saying, can I do that in my house? Or, you know, can I do something? You know, it's like that we're looking how we can use it for ourselves. But what he's talking about here is that self-realized person doesn't see like that. He just sees the Lord, because he is that, and how to use in the Lord's service, remembering the Lord, the interaction between the living entities and the Lord. That's all he's seeing. But the Udipan is these manifestations that everybody else is seeing and becoming inspired in material activities. Does that make sense? And then, of course, as you're seeing the Lord in what aspect, you may not even notice things. Just like the person who walks down the street and doesn't notice 99.9% of what's on the street. You only notice certain things, you know. You're walking down the street and there's a shop there, you know. You look in the window of the street. You didn't notice all the cars, the people that walked by, you know, the beggar that was sitting over there, you know, the different things. And within the shop window, you only notice what you're into. You know, you've been looking for a particular item of clothing. You notice that. You don't notice everything else. You know, that's what the mind does. It only deals with one thing at a time. So the point is we deal with one thing at a time within the material manifestation. What will create some facility or result for us to experience? There, they're only the one thing that they're seeing is Krishna. Does this make sense? Yes.
The path of attachment and path of detachment immediately destroyed.
Yes.
This has like a broad meaning because...
It means all material existence. Because the path of attachment is karma, or karma yoga. And the path of detachment is jnana, or jnana yoga. So those are all destroyed. All that's left is pure unalloyed devotion. Right? Or pure devotion, you know, depending on what level you're taking. But the point is, all that's left is devotional service. Does this make sense?
Upaya Bhakti is also in the category of...
Yeah, but Upaya Bhakti, what is the primary aspect of Upaya Bhakti?
Developing attachment.
And what's the secondary?
Retraction.
Okay, so that means the retraction element is destroyed because it's no longer needed. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, I have a tablet, right? And it has some medicinal usage. I drop that tablet into the water, right? And it starts bubbling and making all kinds of stuff. It has a form, right? Now, when it's ready to use, does it have a form anymore? No. So that means the tablet aspect was only to carry the medicinal aspect. The medicinal aspect of what's important. So it only has meaning up to the point that you can use the one. So when you can use the pure devotion, there's no need of the elements of sadhana that got you there. Right? But it's not like the Mayavadis that now they're rejected. It just means you don't see them in that way anymore. Now they're just part of the process of the pure devotion. Right? They're just the mediums for pure devotion rather than the mediums for engaging your attachment in the Lord's service. You know what I'm saying? The man has a need for money, so therefore his occupation is connected to Krishna. But when he no longer has a need for money, he just serves Krishna. And since he happens to be a householder with an occupation, then he does his household duties and occupation in connection to Krishna. So, therefore, the knowledge of attachment and detachment are removed. But his situation externally doesn't change. That's why this whole thing's so bewildering. It's because we want like these neat, clean little boxes that, okay, this is a gross materialist. This is a new bhakta. This is a nitya siddha, uttamadhikari, you know, for this, that, and just keep on going like that. You know, this is Krishna. You know, this is, you know, like this, that's, we want like that. But the problem is since Krishna is everything, then ultimately you can't separate one thing from the other. But at the same time as you can. Right? That's God. Simultaneously, he is everything, but he's different from everything. Right? You know, we're different from everything, though we claim it's all us. It's my house, my family. We say, we claim mentally it's all the oneness, but it's not us. But for God, it is him at the same time as he is separate. So he can do that. He's God. You know, these are all very profound aspects. Is that okay? Yeah, along with the spiritual parts and parcels, the living entities whose nature are similar to us. Right? In other words, that's what I said. He doesn't see that the living entity is different. The soul in the qualified Brahman, that in the dog eater, and that in the dog. He doesn't see the difference. They're all qualitatively the same soul. Right? The difference is in their understanding of that. Right? That's the only difference. So the dog thinks he's a dog. So his understanding of himself as the soul is not a whole lot. Right? He can tell the difference between something that's living and something that's dead. But that's as far as it goes. You know, so it's that's why the example is given of the covering of the child in the womb. It's such great amount of darkness that it's like hardly any glimmer of anything higher is present. Does that make sense? And the dog eater, now it's not a whole lot better like that. You know, scientifically he's walking around on two legs, so it's supposed to be more elevated, right? But then at the same time, birds walk around on two legs, and they're also called dwija because they're twice born, right? Birds are twice born. Right? The first born from the mother is the egg, and then they are born from the egg. So they're dwijas, technically. Right? You know, they function on air. The vata is their main thing, like the Brahmins. Like that, you know. Yeah, but his consciousness is still like the animals and eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but he does have the potential that he could learn more. Right? The Brahman, then he understands that, is acting on that platform. Therefore, you'll associate with the Brahman, you'll preach to the chandala, and you'll give prasad only to the dog. Right? Right? So they can tell the difference there, but at the same time, they don't see any difference in the soul. It's the same spiritual soul. We see difference. Right? The mode of passion is there's difference in souls. Right? He's a manager soul, he's a Prabhupada disciple soul, and he's not. Or he is doing very nicely and he's done something wrong. But they're a category of souls that can't be purified. You understand? The concept of eternal damnation, all these different things, these are all the mode of passion. Right? You know, there's Christian souls, there's Jewish souls, there's, you know, all these other things. Does that make sense? So this is mode of passion. Right? Mode of goodness means you see all souls as the same. That doesn't mean you don't see different soul individuals, but the quality of them are all the same. Right? Is that? You shall remain eternally manifest. He always sees like that. It's not that sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Right? Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. That's still sadhana. But he always sees like that. Then that's... In this world, only the Supreme Lord, who is eternal, immeasurable, inexhaustible, and complete exists. Right? There isn't anything else. But dormant, foolish people see the Lord as the three worlds. When they attain full knowledge of the Lord, instead of perceiving land, water, fire, air, ether, demigods, human beings, activity, and time, they perceive only the Supreme Brahman everywhere. Right? So they see a oneness, but they can't see the variety. Right? So whatever is there is the Lord, right? But they see him as the three worlds. Then they can't see the actual unlimited element. Therefore, then to give unlimited, they have to drop off the forms. Or you could also take this, because problem is this will be, I don't know, is this written in English or would this kind of translate it?
I can check today.
Yeah, I kind of get the idea that this is translated, but I can't say for sure. Because you also have the thing that you're saying, in this world only the Supreme Lord is eternal, immeasurable, exhaustible, and complete exists. Right? That's the statement. But the dormant people see the, you know, they just see him as the mundane manifestation. They can't see beyond. Like that. And so the when, you're not sure if that means the dormant foolish or it means again back to the original. Because you could take that second as also, because they only see the Supreme Brahman. But the point is they see the Lord. So I guess it would be about the foolish people because it says before, they only see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Only the eternally blissful and effulgent, pure and complete Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with His spiritual parts and parcels, the living entities whose natures are similar to Him, remain eternally manifest. So all he's seeing is Bhagavan and the living entities. While the other person only sees Brahman everywhere. The absolute non-dual supersoul is naturally as clear as a crystal. Just as crystal appears different due to different conditions in which it is situated. Right? It means you take the crystal and you put it in front of something with a particular color, the crystal looks like it's that color. You know, wherever you put it, it looks like it's that. But the crystal's clear. Right? So the crystal can manifest anything. So, just as air is present within a room, a pitcher and a hole, similarly the Supreme Lord is present in water, land, fire, the sky, as well as in Lord Brahma and an ant. So him as a person, he is there everywhere. Right? But if you can only see him only as Brahman, and there's not the person behind that, then it's a problem. Because that's the nirguna Brahman. That's foolish. But when it's saguna, it means that guns come from the person. The Supreme Lord, who is naturally pure and absolute, has manifested the material world through false ego, through the total material elements, and through his illusory energy. Right. Like that. So the false ego then establishes I and mine. I'm going to control. I'm going to be the controller and enjoyer. Then through the total material elements, that means all the different elements, the atoms of the elements, that's what it's manifest. And then through his illusory energy, then the three modes of nature that are applied on there. So you always get these levels, right? Your overall. So if you remove the false ego, the material elements stay, but there's no illusion. You understand? But if the false ego's there, then there's illusion. You know, that's what we're saying. When you become Krishna conscious, there's no illusion because there's no false ego. But the elements stay the same. Does that make sense? That's the point. So as we started in the class, the body doesn't change. But now it's spiritualized, so there's no illusion anymore. Right? So the total material elements remain the same. But just illusion goes because false ego goes. Real ego, then there's, you know, pure knowledge. Ornaments like earrings, bangles, and bracelets are made of gold and are therefore non-different from gold. A pitcher and a brick are made of clay and are therefore non-different from clay. Similarly, the material world is non-different from the Supreme Lord. Know this fact for certain. Maya means ignorance of this fact. That's all it is. If you don't know that, that's Maya. It's not that this rock is Maya. No, this rock is inferior energy. This rock, but it's Maya if you don't see a connection to the Lord. Right? So, The Lord and His energies are non-different, so the Lord and this rock are non-different. Right? So you see the connection to the Lord, then you're always dealing on the transcendental platform. But you don't, then there's a problem. Okay, so we'll end that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.